We've all heard the radio ads about the IRS. They tell you to be afraid, and they try to frighten you into calling. I'm here to tell you that Tax Relief Advocates is different. If you owe money to the IRS, whether it's $5,000, $50,000, or $500,000, TRA has a solution to your tax problem. It doesn't matter if you're sitting in your car, at work, or with your kids, no matter where you are. Visit TRA.com. Don't lose hope. TRA could reduce or even eliminate what you owe to the IRS. Their passion is taxes and helping individuals and businesses fix their IRS problems. They have over 1,000 five-star Google reviews and an A-plus with the Better Business Bureau. You don't need to be afraid of the IRS any longer. Generous tax relief programs are now available that can give you a fresh start. So don't wait. Simply visit TRA.com. That's TRA.com. Or call 800-583-5675. Once again, that's 800-583-5675. Tax Relief Advocates. Real solutions for real people.
Starting a business can seem like a daunting task, unless you have a partner like Shopify. They have the tools you need to start and grow your business. From designing a website to marketing to selling and beyond, Shopify can help with everything you need. There's a reason millions of companies like Mattel, Heinz, and Allbirds continue to trust and use them. With Shopify on your side, turn your big business idea into... Sign up for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/special offer.
Hi, everyone. Happy Sunday. Welcome to One Nation. I'm Brian Kilmeade. What a show you're tuning into tonight. Stephen Mosher wrote about 12 books on China. I want to get his take on what came out of the two-day summit between the big two. Tristan Harris, AI, the race against China. Do we really have to win it? And what worries him most? Gad Saad. He knows about suicidal empathy that's really destroying the left and maybe our country. But first, it's time for the most impactful monologue in America, dare I say, fastest. You know, there's a civil war brewing inside the Democratic Party, and it's not really between liberals and moderates anymore. It's between the old guard and a new, louder, far-left movement that isn't afraid to say the quiet part out loud. Yep, we're talking about self-described socialists mixed in Islamists.
We are not going to let Trump take us to an authoritarian society.
America deserved 9/11, dude. I'm saying it.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if rapes happen on October 7. Like, that doesn't change the dynamic for me even this much.
Our goal is to have the housing actually be worthless to some degree, right? We don't need people to become millionaires off their homes. White middle-class homeowners are a huge problem for our renter justice movement.
Yeah, for Republicans, when you watch this, they know all about how to wrangle in groups in their party that tend to go out on their own. Remember, they had the Tea Party. They had the Freedom Caucus.
God bless the Tea Party.
By saying no to the Republicans, by saying no to the Democrats, and I think this is when we make our stand this week.
We've come to take our government back.
I'm not a witch. I'm nothing you've heard. I'm you.
Well, frankly, I think they're misleading their followers. I think they're pushing our members in places where they don't want to be. And frankly, I just think that they've lost all credibility. So I said, well, we never really thought it would work. Are you kidding me?
So, look, they were mad at each other. But at its core, the Tea Party and the Freedom Caucus wanted reform. They wanted to do things like cutting spending, really changing the way we operate government. But the big difference, one wants to improve the country. The other one wants to change our country.
You can't earn $1 billion.
That's right.
You just can't earn that.
That's exactly correct.
You can get market power. You can break rules.
They assume that my ambition is a title or a seat. And my ambition is way bigger than that. My ambition is to change this country.
Yeah, and it's not just her. It's her mentor, Bernie Sanders. He is now a kingmaker. Don't change the country. That's not for me. But this movement does have the momentum. They got the big crowds. They are winning a lot of primaries. And they're pushing Democrats further left than ever before. Or into silence. What do they stand for? Not capitalism, not America's founding ideals. I sense you're never going to catch any of them with a pocket constitution or embracing Israel.
Criticism comes after Tlaib promoted an anti-Israel chant.
Representative Ilhan Omar's apology late today came after a flurry of bipartisan criticism. It stemmed from her Sunday night tweets that critics say were loaded with stereotypes about Jews and money. Quote, "It's all about the Benjamins, baby."
Yeah, and it got worse from there. Terms like communists that used to end political careers are now being worn like a badge of honor on the left. And one Democrat, who is not any of those things, cannot believe what his party is turning into.
That's our new class of mascots for our party. And now many of the people that are running for the Senate are campaigning with these kinds of people.
Well, I mean, just the word communism or being called a communist, not that long ago, was a dirty word. As it should be, but it's not a dirty word anymore on the left.
By the way, both those guys will vote Democrat. They just can't recognize their party. Even CNN agrees Democrats need a wake-up call.
I think this poll serves as a big-time reality check for Democrats, and that is, it ain't over yet, especially with the redistricting when we look ahead to the 2026 race for Congress. You would have thought that the Democrats' lead would expand on the generic congressional ballot. It didn't happen.
Yep. Speaker Johnson is very happy about this and not worried about losing the House.
But this is a midterm unlike any other, and I have a very boring 90-minute slideshow I can show you for all the reasons we're going to win.
But he went on to say redistricting will help and Democrats getting in the way will help Republicans. And the big question tonight is this. How far left can Democrats go before the country says, I've had enough and you have no shot of winning? My next guest knows all about it. He's a former Democrat himself. He's also chair of politics at the University of Austin and a great friend of the show. Michael Schellenberger, great to see you. What's your thought about the Democratic Party and some of the sound you just heard and some of the beliefs that are out there?
Hey, Brian, it's great to be with you. This is a massive subject, obviously. I think that the radicalization of the left and the Democrats is the big political story. And this was really confirmed earlier this year. There was a major study that was done comparing the radicalization on specific issues between Republicans and Democrats, and they found that the left had radicalized 10 times more than the right. This was an independent study done by, I think, four British social scientists. You know, at the heart of socialism, I think it's important for people to remember, is the desire for revenge against a system that people feel like has treated them unfairly. So many of the people that preach socialism right now on the Democrat side are folks that are disappointed with their own lives. Many of them are college graduates. There were just half as many jobs for college graduates as there were college graduates over the last 10 or 20 years. And so you have a lot of anger and resentment against the system. We need a lot more electricians than we do gender studies majors. And so if you ended up going down that path, you're very upset and disappointed. I think that's what drove Mamdani's victory. I think that's why you saw Mamdani really criticizing wealthy New Yorkers. They have a lot more hatred, I think, of the rich and the people that have succeeded in society than they do real compassion for the most vulnerable.
So when I see a movement like this, I always think it's poll driven and behind the scenes they were told, say this, this is what the American people want to hear. But I get the sense this is not what the American people want to hear. It's almost like a venting session with no pre-thought. It bothers me they think that way, but it's actually not helping them win over the country, is it?
No, I mean, look, I think they've got a real problem in the Democrat Party, which is that they've got a radicalized base who holds views that are completely out of step, not just with Republicans, but with swing voters. And that's going to be a real challenge for Governor Gavin Newsom, for Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez, and for others trying to win the nomination. If they run to the left in the primaries and then they try to tack back to the center, they risk alienating their base or leaving them at home. So it's a tricky situation. I think it's important to keep in mind that the left strategy for a long time has been to essentially masquerade as something much more moderate than they really are and to take up these much more popular issues like people being against racial discrimination, people being against invasions of privacy. And then they use those and twist, or on homelessness, then they use those and twist those to advance what's essentially an anti-civilization, anti-American, and anti-capitalist agenda.
Wow, you really took my topic sentence to another level. I would give you an A if I was grading you, Michael. I want to talk about something else you know very well, and that's Los Angeles. Spencer Pratt is capturing the imagination of a lot of frustrated people. He's gaining ground in the mayor's race, maybe because Karen Bass thinks missing teeth are the city's biggest problem.
How many people who are unhoused that you meet have no teeth at all? They don't have teeth. Why? Because meth rots your teeth. You can't succeed without teeth. So there needs to be comprehensive health care provided to people.
So he's talking about homelessness, and he was talking about illegal immigrants, that you can't just throw health care at them when they need rehab. And he's telling a meth addict to go get a job is not going to get them a job. And her takeaway is people should all get free dental.
Yeah, look, I mean, Brian, we've known since Homer's The Odyssey that when people are addicted to hard drugs, that they need an intervention. We have a whole television show about imposing that intervention on friends and family when they're out of control with their substance use. Well, when they get so out of control, they end up on the street homeless, then it's up to society to provide that intervention. Well, instead of intervening, what the left in California has done has enabled addiction, enabled untreated mental illness. It's really a policy of cruelty, but where it comes from is this view that civilization is fundamentally immoral, that capitalism is fundamentally immoral. That's why Democrats are constantly misdescribing people with addiction and untreated mental illness as simply poor people, as though it was just caused by high rents.
Yeah, they missed a payment. Not the case. I think Spencer Bratt's got a real shot at winning. I look forward to talking to you about that again. I also like talking to you about global warming, climate change, and now the big freeze. So many people have cashed in on so-called climate change and climate alarmism. Nobody has cashed in more than Al Gore. I mean, over the last 25 years, whether it's documentaries winning awards or he's going and giving big speaking engagements, he says the world has a fever. The earth has a fever. He realizes nothing's turning out like he predicted. So he's got a new message. Listen.
There's a whole big article summarizing the recent dire warnings of the scientists who found yet more confirmatory information that this is a very real threat within the next 25 years.
If that happens and the Gulf Stream ceases to exist as we know it, we're in an ice age in like 10 years.
No. It would take long. It would be bad. It would be very bad, and it would be bad on a scale that is beyond anything we can compare it to today.
Same thing he said about warming. He now says we can expect an ice age.
Yeah, look, these guys are in real trouble. I mean, we've had no loss of Arctic ice over the last 20 years. They lied about the coral reef on the Great Barrier Reef. We now know that the fires in California have actually been at all-time lows, and so it's clearly from forest mismanagement, not from climate change. And now the IPCC, which is sort of the main scientific body, has had to admit that the most catastrophic scenario of really high emissions is impossible. It simply can't happen. So they're in a huge credibility crisis. Look, I think that's why we're seeing right now the left is switching from climate apocalypse to AI apocalypse. The left needs this really terrifying apocalyptic agenda in order to gain more control over society. And that's the ways in which it's always been very consistent with the push for socialism.
Yeah, I did not know they were prepared to do that type of pivot. But you notice you have a China summit. They don't bring up green pledges, and no one's talking about the Paris Climate Change Summit anymore. Michael, always great to talk to you. I look forward to talking to you along this campaign and after the California primaries are done.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Great to see you.
This is the first time I've ever heard a Chinese leader and foreign ministry issue such a severe warning on Taiwan. They use the term that's just almost kind of nasty. It's hard to translate. It's called gao huai in Mandarin. Gao huai. Gao means to screw. Huai means bad. When they put it into English, it was don't mess it up. We must not mess it up. Well, that's not quite as strong as what it sounds like in Mandarin.
Well, President Xi delivering a blunt message to President Trump over Taiwan during the high-stakes summit over in China. That, of course, is Mike Pillsbury. When asked whether America would defend Taiwan, Trump would not reveal his cards.
There's only one person that knows that. You know who it is? Me.
Joining us now to expand on this conversation, I cannot wait to get his analysis. He's written 12 books on China, including The Devil and Communist China. Steve Mosher, great to see you. Steve, your reaction to what we know about the summit and the way these two got along?
Well, I think they got along splendidly because Xi Jinping was very, very interested in making nice to Donald Trump. Think about all the grand ceremony, the pageantry surrounding his visit. I haven't seen anything like this since Nixon's first visit to China. The goose-stepping soldiers, the little children bobbing up and down like so many spring-loaded robots, all obviously contrived, phony, and fake. But so Trump enters Beijing looking like a conquering hero, which, Ryan, if you look at recent happenings around the world, that's actually a pretty apt description of where we stand vis-a-vis China. China wants to play nice. Remember, China's grand strategy under Xi Jinping was to create a new world order, right? To dominate Asia by 2035, to dominate the world by 2049. That plan is obviously going up in flames. With setbacks in Venezuela, Panama, Cuba, Iran, the global plan is now a dead letter. And then we look at the regional plan. Lots of nasty sayings about Taiwan. You always get that in these meetings. It's been going on for decades. So what about the regional plan that Taiwan and South Korea and the Philippines and Japan would compromise with China and fall into China's sphere of influence? That's a dead letter, too. Japan is committed to the defense of Taiwan. That's huge. Taiwan is helping the Philippines bolster its defenses. It's helping Australia by selling them frigates to bolster its defenses. So Taiwan is probably less likely to be invaded now than it was in any point in the last 20 years. And finally, Taiwan is strategically more important to us than China. Why? Because of the chips. Also because of its position on the first island chain. Trump isn't going to give an inch on China. China itself is going to continue to make these blustering statements.
I mean, I've been told by people in government he gave the perfect answer, because you don't want to say we will defend, like Joe Biden blurted out in his State Department walk back. He said in talking to him one on one, Taiwan came up a lot. And I'm not going to talk about what our strategy is. That is the smart thing to do. Meanwhile, President Trump tends to be a blunt instrument, but he can be very subtle when he wants to. Now let's bring up Iran and talk about what's happening there. You pulled out a very good point just before the show. And you said the fact that President Xi agrees with us that no one, especially Iran, should be in control of the strait and international waters is key. Why?
Well, it's absolutely key. I mean, we've talked about soybeans and chips and Boeing jets and so forth. But the main accomplishment here was that China has now adopted the American position vis-a-vis Iran. It has said the Straits of Hormuz must be open. It has said Iran must not charge tolls. It has said that Iran must not have a nuclear weapon. In other words, Xi Jinping, because he has no choice, because he needs the energy, is aligning with Trump on Iran. And you know what? The U.S. side went into this meeting not demanding this, sort of leaving this quietly on the table. And it's often said that diplomacy is the art of letting the other party have things your way. Well, that's exactly how we played this, and we played it exactly right. And by the way, the proof that this is a big change comes from Iran itself, where they have just put out a statement saying, quote, "Those who betray in secret will be exposed in public." So I think they feel betrayed by China's taking the American position. And that means any division between Iran and China is a good thing.
Keep in mind, as you know, that's a good point, Steve. The other thing is, one of the Chinese tankers got hit by the Iranians, number two. They're not getting much oil out there, number three. And number four, is Iran that crazy and suicidal to say something negative, even subtly, to China, the one necessary ally they need to sustain themselves?
They've alienated everyone. It's just astonishing to me. I mean, it's not just Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, the Arab Emirates. They've alienated the wider world. They've shot missiles at Turkey and Cyprus, and now they're alienating China. It's kind of a death wish writ large, which we've always suspected about the Ayatollah, sadly.
Yeah, and I think we go back to action there, and China made it clear they're willing to help any way possible. I love the president's answer. I don't want to ask a favor from them, because I don't want to have to owe them a favor. So I think we'll keep it as it is. Thanks so much, Steve Mosher. It's always great to get your insight. Meanwhile, coming up on this show, they say kill them with kindness. They also say too much of a good thing is a bad thing. My next guest explains how misguided kindness on the left is destroying our country. Plus, Landman superstar Billy Bob Thornton has a blunt message for Hollywood. Don't miss the media moments that matter. And speaking of not missing, be sure to catch me in Reno, Nevada. In a couple of weeks, it's going to be great history, liberty, and laughs. Streamed on Fox Nation. Pensacola, Florida, July 11th. And new dates coming this fall, including Westbury, Red Bank, Westbury, New York, that is, Clearwater, Florida, Jacksonville, and Chesterfield, just outside St. Louis. BrianKilmeade.com for tickets. Bring up the music. See you there. So, we may think we live in the information age, but we're also living in the age of empathy, suicidal empathy, to be more precise. And what exactly does that mean? Suicidal empathy is a tragic manifestation at the civilization level of the well-known proverb, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And it's that sentiment that is destroying Democratic-run cities and states.
I'm pro stealing from big corporations because, you know, they steal quite a bit more from their own workers.
Congresswoman Porter, your thoughts on the idea of funding health care for undocumented immigrants statewide?
Yes.
Thank you for joining the call to get ICE out of our cities, for us to dismantle this department that is not just rogue, but unlawful.
Joining us now, the author of a brand new book, Suicidal Empathy, bestseller. It's Dying to Be Kind. Gad Saad, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it. Always good to see you.
Likewise. Thank you for having me, Brian.
I cannot believe you write a book to get a perspective on society, but you could rip the news from the headlines that backs up your title. First off, I question if there are even good intentions behind some of the empathy that we're witnessing.
I mean, I think that many of them do truly believe that they are, you know, as they stroke their hair in the mirror of moral preening, they think that they are good people. It's unfair that illegal immigrants can't come and live the good life in the United States. It's unfair that felons don't receive a second chance, ergo 157th chance. It's unfair that trans women with penises can't compete with biological women. So many of the people that I speak to genuinely believe that the positions that they take are rooted in some higher transcendental morality.
Right. And is that why you wrote the book? You felt you had to take a step back and figure out what was going on here?
Exactly right. Right. So The Parasitic Mind, my previous book, looked at what happens when our cognitive system is hijacked, our thinking processes. But for me to fully parasitize you, I have to hijack both your cognitive system and your emotional system. So that's exactly what I do in Suicidal Empathy. I basically argue that I need to get to your affective system in order to truly own your capacity to engage in critical thinking.
Or they just people rip you as a horrible person if you say to yourself, that's not practical to give everybody health care. It's not practical to open up our borders because our country is richer than yours. I want to rip something actually from the headlines from a couple of days ago. It's about a 23-year-old sure. female student who was a victim and then later acted out and it cost somebody their lives. Quote, I regret it 100% and I actually feel really bad that a man lost his life. Maybe a part of me was just like, I don't want to put another black man in jail. But at some point, if you are a criminal, you're a criminal. And he was scary. He was a scary guy. And to back it up, essentially, this guy went and killed somebody, but assaulted her first. And she didn't press charges or turn him in because he was black.
Yeah. Well, this is an incredible story, of course. And had it happened a bit earlier, it would have made it to my book. But I've got a story that's even much wilder than the one that you just discussed. I discuss in the book a story of a super progressive liberal white woman who decides to go down to Haiti to demonstrate that this stereotype of the violent black man simply does not hold true. And she finds out when reality slaps her that she's taken up to the top of a rooftop and repeatedly raped by a Haitian man, at the end of which she concludes, she wrote this in an actual essay, that she was thankful for what he did to her because ultimately it demonstrated that it was white supremacy that caused the black man to rape the white woman. That's what suicidal empathy looks like, Brian.
It's crazy. I have an excerpt from your book, and then maybe you could comment on it. Once the suicidal empathy of socialism is coupled with the degeneracy of a woke ideology, you're no longer a free and dignified human being, but an empathetic worker ant, slaving for a greater goal. Because?
Yeah, so let me tell you where that comes from. So E.O. Wilson, the Harvard biologist who studied social ants, gave one of the best answers to the following question. Professor Wilson, what are your views on communism? And he said, great idea, wrong species, meaning that social ants are communistic because there's a reproductive queen, and then the rest of the ants are interchangeable cogs in the wheel, right? There are worker ants and warrior ants, completely interchangeable. But human beings are not worker ants. Human beings, some of us are taller, shorter, harder working, less harder working, more assertive, less assertive. So to try to impose a socio-political economic system, in this case, communism or socialism, on a species that is hierarchical will always fail, as the data has shown it over and over again.
So that was just a perfect example. And we should also realize, too, I mean, people should have compassion. You should have empathy. But it's got to be logical, and it's got to be rooted in some type of end goal, right?
Well, it's got to be. Look, empathy is a wonderful virtue. We are a social species. Therefore, part of the way that we engage in a lubricant of our sociality is to be empathetic towards each other. But like Aristotle explained to us several thousand years ago, all good things in moderation. Too little empathy makes you a psychopath. Too much empathy invoked at the wrong circumstances towards the wrong target results in civilizational collapse.
All right, Kat, congratulations. By the way, I'm sure it helps sales when Elon Musk says everyone's got to buy this book, Suicidal Empathy, Free the Wolves, Dying to be Kind. Thanks so much, Kat. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Yes. Coming up next, Carly Shimkus is here with the Media Moments That Matter, and you're looking at a man who crashed a fashion show. I have all the details. Excuse me. Carly has all the details when we come back at the Media Moments That Matter. And I have good news for Carly and the rest of America. I have a YouTube channel, youtube.com at the Brian Kilmeade Show. Come on over here, Carly. Get ready. Can't see what you have for us. Can't wait to see what you have for us.
Let's do it.
She's got bass. She's a winner. She's a lady.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Marianne Rafferty in Los Angeles. Dangerous storms are battering millions across the central U.S. at this hour. Heavy rain, strong winds, large hail, and tornadoes are all possible. So far, a large tornado has been reported in Nebraska, while watches and warnings have been issued across parts of South Dakota, Kansas, and Iowa. Severe storms are expected to stretch over 1,000 miles from Texas to Michigan over the next 2 days. And New York is bracing for a chaotic commute tomorrow after workers with the Long Island Railroad went on strike over the weekend. The National Mediation Board has stepped in to try and help the unions and the Metropolitan Transportation Authority reach an agreement on a new contract. The two sides have been negotiating for months, but talks have stalled over salaries and health care disputes. The LIRR is the country's largest commuter rail system. I'm Marianne Rafferty. Now back to One Nation.
Media Moments That Matter.
All right, it's that time again. This week, I gave my TV guy. I gave all my cords and my tape stock and, of course, the VCR, too. Carly Shimkus, Fox & Friends first co-host who does everything on the channel.
I'm still trying to figure out how to sit in this chair.
Right. Well, you look fantastic.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Yeah.
So, listen, I asked you to do this assignment. I know you're pregnant and you got a lot on your mind. You got a show and you're always traveling. Did you do it?
I did.
Yes?
Are you kidding?
Okay.
DVR and a TV guide. Can't miss it. Okay, so let's start with some celebrity news, as
okay.
you like to say, because actor Billy Bob Thornton, he was on Howie Mandel's podcast, and he said, celebrities, stop lecturing people about politics. Mm.
I think to me is way more important than an actor or actress or musician telling people, like you said, who to vote for, because it's like, I mean, some guy's on the fence, you know,
yeah.
and it's like, well, Dash Riprock said it on the Golden Globes, so I'm voting for, you know, it's like, I mean, I don't know anything about politics. I have no idea. I mean, and the stuff that I believe about it, I don't want to force it down somebody else's throat because I'm not an expert on that.
Well, not only do I like him on Landman, I love that philosophy, but a lot of his monologues have been somewhat conservative about oil and gas, where people suspected that maybe
right.
he was, but he's trying to tell you, No.
Well, guess what, Brian? The ladies of The View heard this clip and hated it. Watch.
Imagine bragging about how uninformed you are. Oh, I don't know anything about politics. You're an American citizen. Don't you watch the
news? Well, I would
say
that.
Don't you read the paper?
I don't think that every celebrity needs to scream from the mountaintop.
When you have a platform, I think that you have a responsibility to speak up about what's going on in this country. In my view, silence is complicity.
And a lot of this table criticized George Clooney when he wrote his Biden op-ed. That is a celebrity using his voice saying what he believes.
Fine.
It can't just be when they agree with your position.
He can say it and I can...
So what do you think about
that? They don't get it.
I mean, Sonny Hostin saying if you're a celebrity, if you have a platform, it's your responsibility to speak about politics. Like, imagine a seven-year-old throwing a football around with his dad, showing promise, and then one day it's like, oh, you also need to have a PhD in Iran.
Forget
like,
it. Yeah.
Really? It's not your responsibility.
Know your lane.
Yeah. And also, there is a line from Landman where Billy Bob Thornton talks about the ladies of The View and describes them as heavily editing this, but millionaires who are angry about other millionaires and you and me and Donald Trump and men and everybody else who has a bee up their tush. So
do you think that has something to do? Do you think that has something to do with the fact that they're a little angry at him for not having a political
IQ? I'm sure they caught wind of that clip and it probably didn't help.
All right. But you weren't done after one.
I was certainly not done because Stephen A. Smith, he sparked some fury on social media after saying this about women to Cam Newton. Watch.
This assault against masculinity, it's going to end with this. I don't care. I can cook for myself. I don't want to. I want you to cook. I'll pay for the food. I'll take you out. I'll take you out every week.
Yes.
We're doing it. Only thing I'm doing for myself is getting up for some cereal. That's it. I'm not cooking. I'm not. I don't feel like it. If I have to do that, why do I need you? You the woman in my life and I'm smelling pine saw. That ain't going to last. I assure you that. Go get the brother that don't mind. You know, I hope he can offer you what I'm offering.
So what do you think? Is he going to get backlash on that?
I just like, yes. I just like Cam Newton. He's like, I wish this hat were bigger. Just to cover it over. I think that there's a lot of women who will hate what he said. And a lot of men are like, he said exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, although we don't say it out loud.
Yeah, just don't say it out loud.
So when you have a 5-year contract paying you $100 million a day, that's what happens.
Right?
You have job security.
Yeah.
All right,
he needs a trad wife. There is a whole trend out there of people who would totally agree with this sort of lifestyle.
Well, absolutely. The other thing is I don't want to walk into a house and smell pine sol. I want to smell dinner. So good luck with that.
Yeah, we'll leave
but
that
just
there.
Assuming that women like to cook.
Yeah.
Because in 1950 was the thing to do.
That's exactly right.
Right.
I mean, I like to bake, but
two is great. But can you do a third?
This may be the best story of the day because I want everybody to watch the screens right now because there was a man in Australia. He decided to wake up one morning, do something nice for himself, go for a morning swim. And there he is in the middle of a fashion show runway for Australian Fashion Week. And he has no idea this is going on. And this isn't DVR related. This is going viral on social media. So we're entering a new medium.
So I was looking this up. He says, Carly, he goes, I've been going to this beach for 30 years. I thought if this was a fashion show, someone would have stopped me from walking down the stage.
This is not his fault.
But look at.
But he's stretching. He takes off his shirt at one point, goes for that swim. And then there's an active runway show going on for a brand that actually he ends up helping because it's called Comus. That's the name of the brand. And I don't know how popular it is in Australia. I personally never heard of it, but now I have.
See, I thought it was Comus.
Oh, maybe it's Comus.
Comus sounds kind of negative, but you might be right.
C-O-M-M-A-S. And the guy who runs the brand thought this was hilarious.
All right, that is fantastic. I think it's Jack Kahn, and he later apologized to him. That is the funniest story ever.
Isn't it so funny? Stretch it out.
Right. But I would love to be that carefree in life. Not really worried if you're on a runway or not.
Yeah, and I'm sure he saw people watching, and he was just like, hey, why is everybody here? I'm just going for my swim.
Well, I know why you're here. To tell America what matters.
And did I do an okay job?
As usual.
Oh,
fantastic.
Good. Thank you.
Carly Shimkus, thanks so much.
So good to see you.
Meanwhile, still to come on this show, the dark side of AI. Could it wipe out mankind?
Not good news, the world that we're heading into. I mean, I'll just be honest. I know people who work on AI risk who don't expect their children to make it to high school.
The rise of artificial intelligence is the next industrial revolution. What happened?
Yes, you did. The divide over AI. Artificial intelligence is no longer some futuristic concept. It's changing the way the world works, and not everyone is so sure about it, as you just heard. President Trump and met with President Xi in China, where AI was among the many topics discussed as the race for the technological dominance between the U.S. and China intensifies. Both leaders agree to continue discussions and putting AI guardrails in place to prevent dangerous misuse and managing the risks of rapidly advancing technology. And according to one AI safety researcher, it is needed.
Connor, how many people in the world right now are working on AGI?
At least 20,000, I would say.
20,000?
I would expect so.
Okay, and how many people are working full-time to make sure AI doesn't, like, kill us all?
Probably less than 200 in the world.
And while America debates the dangers of AI, China is aggressively embracing it. Driverless taxis on streets, robots working in hotels and restaurants, medical chatbots helping patients. So where's this all heading? There's obviously some good, really good stuff in there, clearly. Joining us now is Tristan Harris, one of the leading voices warning about the unintended consequences of AI. He also is the executive director and co-founder for Humane Technology, as well as the AI Doc, which is now streaming,
yes.
Correct? Which is a fantastic documentary, tells all pedestrians like me that are in the middle of it what we like and don't like about it. First off, when you heard the boos at the commencement address, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think it reflects the popular sentiment that 57% of Americans right now, according to a recent NBC News poll, think that the risks of AI outweigh the benefits of AI. Because the problem is that after AI automates all of this labor in our economy, there's not a transition plan for how are people going to make ends meet. Does it sound like a good idea for you and your family to only be able to pay your bills because an AI company that took your job is going to pay you? So you're kind of underneath the thumb of this very big, you know, technology company, right? And we don't have agency and freedom. And so we need to make sure that we don't just have universal basic income. We need universal basic ownership of these technologies.
Right.
But also, AI presents risks at the same time. It's not just that it's going to disrupt our labor. It's that it's already doing things that are honestly breaking through. The top, for example, cyber hacker in the world is no longer a human. It's Claude Mythos. It can break into every major operating system and web browser in the world.
It's from Anthropic.
This is from
Anthropic. That's an American company.
That's an American company. And, you know, we talk about the chips. So now, as a result of this meeting that was just had between President Trump and President Xi, there's talk of selling our NVIDIA H200 chips to China.
They're going to
do that. Now, here's the problem. What is the number one reason you think DeepSeek, the Chinese AI company, said they couldn't train their next most powerful model? What's that reason?
I don't know.
It's that they didn't have access to the latest chips. So imagine a world where they had that access to American chips, and now they came up with Claude Mythos level cyber hacking before we did. That doesn't sound very safe to me.
It doesn't. And we also saw in the clip leading into the segment where people were asked, you know, will I have, you know, should I have kids? And you expressed in the documentary that you're worried that a lot of people are worried that their kid's not going to last through high school.
Well, there are people who work on AI risk who, I'm not trying to scare people, but there are people who work in AI risk who don't expect their children to make it to high school if we don't do something different than what we're doing. Because the thing is, Brian, we have evidence, and we've been talking about this for a long time, but we have new evidence now of AI doing crazy things that used to be only hypothetical. I'll give you an example. There is an AI that when it's being tested or evaluated, it can tell and it will start to change its behavior. It's like a kid who knows they're being evaluated and they change their behavior because they know mom's looking.
Wow.
And they can actually tell when not just an evaluator is looking, but when another AI is evaluating its behavior. And then it will, like, basically hack into the AI that's judging it to kind of make it pass the test. So in other words, the AI knows not when a human's evaluating it, but when an AI is evaluating it, and then it hacks into it. This is stuff that sounds like science fiction, but we're actually making it in real life.
So you, when you saw China and the U.S. meet, and Trump and Xi meet, you know they talked about AI.
That's right.
So where should we work together, and where should we separate and try to win?
Yeah. So just like the Soviet Union and the United States had a red phone to say we have to de-escalate certain nuclear situations, I think we need a AI red lines phone between the U.S. and China so that we're operating with the same evidence of where the dangers are. And a couple things we could agree on. We should not open source an AI model that can hack into any cyber infrastructure on planet Earth. We should not do that.
But the Chinese will never go by that. They're already trying to hack us in any way possible.
No, they want to hack us. That is true. Yeah. But they don't want to
open source
that.
They've embedded in our water system.
They're in our water system there, but we're also in some of their stuff. But here's the thing. Do they want to open source that so that a non-state actor, so a terrorist group or a 16-year-old in some other country can hack into all of our countries? So China has an interest in the U.S. not screwing it up, and the U.S. has an interest in China not screwing it up.
And the other thing that China is worried about is being too open. They like deny their people an ability to find out what's going outside their country hear any negativity towards their country.
If
they let AI go wild, their people will go. And also, I want to talk about the different models. China's saying, hey, we have an AI advance. Crowdsource it. Give it to the people. Yep. Help the mechanic. Help the deli owner.
Yep.
We're keeping Sam Altman and Elon Musk keeping everything close in Silicon Valley and deciding what the public will get. What do you like better?
Well, I think so. We're not in a race for just the technology. We're in a race for who's better at integrating that technology in a way that actually strengthens your society. So we're actually in a race for who can actually automate basically parts of our economy, but without disrupting, for example, too many jobs. And in China, for example, there was a lawsuit in which basically a company was deemed it was illegal for them to fire someone because of AI without paying them a fair wage. So again, we're in a competition not just for the technology, but who's better at managing and governing with wisdom this technology.
Right. And right now, I think we have a lead by about 6 months, they say. But everyone said, look out for Mythos. It's awe-inspiring in its advancement, but also worrisome.
That's right.
Kristen Harris, thanks so much.
Always good to be with you.
Glad to see your movie on streaming.
Yep.
That's what it was.
Movies on streaming.
See.
Yep.
It started up in theaters. All right, now it's time for your sneak peek of the week. For that, Tristan, you could stay seated. It's up to me to tell everyone what to look forward to this week, and here we go. First off, there's a hearing on the SPLC's role in funneling money to extremists. People are wondering about that. They said they're sending out people to pretend as if they are mobsters or terrorists, but they're not really. There's a problem with that. There's no credibility in that story. Something else we're taking a look at, the airline CEOs to testify on TSA security. I'm pretty sure we could streamline a lot of what's going on right now. Also, there's a very worrisome, especially what happened in Colorado when someone scaled the fence over there and got on the runway. What else can I tell you about that's coming up this week? Secretary Duffy to testify on the Department of Transportation budget. He wants another $2 billion to finish off his modernization when it comes to air traffic control. Please give it to him. That should be bipartisan. And on Sunday, sports, Indianapolis 500 will air exclusively on Fox. I'll tell you, I've never seen Fox Sports as pumped up as when they got that franchise last year. Meanwhile, that is it for us tonight. Tune into my radio show from 9 to noon. Tristan loves it. He comes on all the time. Michael Goodwin is going to be one of my guests and also some other special guests as well. Two things now. Catch me on Fox and Friends in just a few hours, I promise, to change. Always stay within yourself and spend your whole day and your night watching Fox. Green-haired bugs love beat up trucks, and when the tide comes out on top, I'm just a chip off the old.